in the center. Now suddenly it's a community deal. Yes. And so if you're in an HOA and you're trying to keep, let's do the work party to keep everything looking up, it's just easier to deal with. So I think there is some value in the centrally, not just beyond access, but in terms of livability and a nicer community.
Maintenance and upkeep. If everybody has to drive by it, very likely they are going to keep it looking nice.
Okay.
Richard, do you want to propose a full sentence for the record?
Well, I would go just with centrally, and to address the other issues, and accessible. Maybe I know it's not the greatest defining term, but it captures the concern of the commissioners.
Could we go with usable? Accessible is a term of art that most people would go to ADA the moment you actually utilize the word. I think what you're trying to get at is that it has to be usable land, not on a steep slope, not people have to be able to access it.
Wasn't that already somewhere else in the matrix? I was seeing something about, 5%.
That is coming up when we're talking about one of the planning commissioners requested we discuss recreational open space in multifamily projects. That's, I think, on page 2 or 3.
Okay. Eric, do you want to come back with a draft of that for the next meeting?
Yep.
You know, usable is also a term that, what do you mean? Usable doesn't imply slope. It doesn't imply distance necessarily. But, we can work on it.
Okay.
Yeah. I think as we're going through all the code, there is the back and forth between, do you want flexible code or do you want numbers objective? Anybody can see exactly what that is. Having been in a position where I've gone back and forth on that question, the topography and the site-specific nature of so many of these things, the more objectivity you apply, the more dolphins you catch in your tuna nets. There's a lot of projects that end up getting impacted negatively because they didn't hit 10%. They could hit 8%, but because it said 10% in the code, you have to meet 10%.
Okay.
So I am at the point in my career, whether it's right or wrong, where I've gone back to providing a certain level of flexibility so that the discussion can be had between developers, planners, and the public as to what that looks like, so that a property that is not perfectly square or rectangular or happens to have a stream running through it has a better chance of designing a project in a manner that is affordable than having to add up to 10%. But that, again, is just my opinion.
No, I can accept the experience side of that for sure.
Okay.
So, yes, I'll come back with some language.
All right. That brings us to the land division, non-conforming lots for public purpose.
All right. Everybody close their eyes once again. Okay. Come on. It's not that hard. It's just letters. Okay, here we are. So this again is in the exemption area, things that don't necessarily need to go through subdivision code. This is a new addition. This is a division of land made for the purpose of transferring land to a government entity or nonprofit land trust to accomplish any public purpose. The public purpose must confer a general benefit to the large part of the public. The purpose of that is to, in many instances, Kitsap County is in the process of trying to acquire land from an individual. Sometimes they want to maintain a home on it, and the rest goes into open space. Or there's a sewer pump station that needs to be located on the property. If we have to go through a large lot subdivision or a short plat, that project is substantially longer, yet substantially more expensive. This is being included in there so that nonprofits like the Great Peninsula Conservancy, et cetera, are able to acquire trail easements fee simple without necessarily having to go through a full subdivision process. Again, these are for public purposes, parks, trails, sewer plants, not roads. Roads are their own thing. Beach access, take your pick. The comment that came was that she was concerned that it would have an impact on the ability for people to subdivide off an acre for a, we've read through it a number of times and we did not see that issue. In fact, it's trying to do the exact opposite. What it doesn't allow is it doesn't allow a private property owner to sell to, say, an HOA who happens to be, say, a tot lot or something like that. And I think maybe that was that she believed that it should be able to be offered to more people than just the public and nonprofits. But, of course, once you do that, then you are opening a Pandora's box. You trust us, right?
I think it's a great idea. It should be in the code. Basically, I think we're dealing with deeds in lieu of condemnation type arrangements. The problem I have is just the last words in the sentence, a benefit to a large part of the public. When we're dealing with condemnation or deeds in lieu of condemnation, it has to be for the benefit of the public. Mm-hmm. I don't know what the large part of the public is. I've never heard that in any jurisprudence. I'd hate to see a good project go down because, well, it only benefits 40% of the county rather than 60%. So I'm not sure what those words mean or add to it.
I could definitely see that perspective. We could definitely change that last sentence. Public purpose must confer a significant public benefit.
Right. To the public. To get public benefit. That'll work.
Okay.
Is that language better or worse or... It definitely is clearer.
I think if you just strike a large part of the sentence, works.
Okay. General benefit to the public. All right. Moving on. We are now moving into Title 17. Let's see the top. Let's see. Okay, I guess right. So we're going to start with a big ticket item from the code amendments, and that is tree canopy code. We did receive a good amount of testimony, both pro and con, in regards to tree canopy regulations. There we are. So, yeah, just as a reminder, the applicability of this is for any development, subdividing, or a project that includes four or more units, and that this is intended to be based upon tree units. So if you have X amount of gross acreage, you need to have a certain amount of tree units, and then there is a table in here regarding the replacement of tree units. If you are going to basically plant new trees, or what retention of existing trees are worth based upon their size. We did receive a good amount of testimony on, again, the merits of having that code at all, which is probably a good place for the Planning Commission to start. Obviously, the Board of County Commissioners has it in its drafts. It is very interested in it as a concept. If we could start there, and then, depending on that decision, we could then talk about edits to the code.
Commissioner Shattuck.
In terms of do we need it now, I think the big issue is this going to reduce the amount of new construction we're going to have in the regional center or, the other UGAs. I look at Silverdale and the natural places to put some of the medium and low income units we're talking about is west of Randall Way, up by the hospital, or, you know, redevelopment in Old Town. Those seems to me to be the easy pickings to get some of this off and going. And it seemed that the tree canopy issue would slow that down. And so it would be better off in saying, hey, let's get working on our low and moderate income housing before we impose this. I on reflection, I think you've got some changes here that would help that. And so, you know, maybe that's a better approach. Let's you know, work within the framework of a tree canopy. So I guess that's my thought on deferring it at this point.
Would it be helpful for me just to kind of give just I know I gave the presentation a month or so ago, just a quick primer on how the tree code works. I do have them on some slides here if that would be valuable. But again, I don't want to, if you guys have seen it before and it's not valuable.
I think everybody understood the requirements for the tree canopy.
Not a problem.
I know for myself, one of the issues is we're tossing the critical area ordinance, the buildable land report. Everything has been put in place without the tree canopy being part of it. And it seems that to toss the tree canopy in now disrupts everything that we've tried to work towards. And it seems that a delay of 1 year or so to see how that fits into all the changes we've made seems a more prudent move than to just wholesale, here's the new requirement, and watch the dust go up again and, you know, all the calculations are out the window again.
We obviously attempted to capture tree canopy in the preferred alternative. We did remove a certain amount of land from supply based upon tree canopy code. Obviously, everything you indicated was right. We have added additional critical areas regulations, which is going to have an impact on developable land. And then we have potential tree canopy code, which could be, again, taking away additional land. However, I think we also acknowledge that having an asphalt jungle is not necessarily what we're looking for. To Mr. Shattuck's point, I think would there potentially have to be more trees than you would develop normally in a multifamily project in Silverdale? Yes, probably so. But likely the biggest change you're going to see is that the landscaping for the various areas are going to be less shrubbery and more trees. That can either be good or bad. Usually they go with landscaping, shorter landscaping because it's easier to maintain. But if you had to meet the tree canopy, likely you'd be, those planter strips would not be rhododendrons. They would likely end up being trees, kind of like you see at the Sportsman's Warehouse complex.
Now, I would recommend that we take the tree canopy up soon. But at this stage, I would be more comfortable saying it needs to be pushed to 2025 so that we can see what run the numbers and see what that's going to do to our buildable land and the critical area ordinances. Unless I have a...
No, and I like the idea of the 24-inch plus tree and the 36-inch tree getting a lot more credits. I don't have in front of me what the number jump would be. But I think right now every comp plan's a heavy lift, right? And we have the CAO, and we know the current structure of DCD and who's missing. Right. I mean, it's pretty common knowledge where we're sitting with an interim director, and staff challenges and having lost a few critical staff people in the last 18 months on whatever that is, retention, competitiveness, whatever. This feels like shoving more in our mouth when our fork was pretty full between now and December 31st. I worry about staff capacity on the things that aren't legally required to make it over the finish line this year. So I like where it's going. I like the edits that were in some of the public commentary. I just worry about putting 9 extra bites on a fork that I can't fit in my mouth right now from the DCD's perspective.
Understood.
Okay.
I do have a comment that I'd like to share.
Commissioner Smith, we could barely hear you.
Oh, okay. I'm sorry if you can't hear me. I do have a comment that I'd like to share. It's nothing new that hasn't already been said, but I would like to share that as we're looking at our comp plan, it's a strategic plan for the next 20 years. There does need to be some balance to our environment, to the density that we're bringing to our community. There needs to be some type of reference to preserving and promoting the environment that we currently live in. And we've also seen those comments through public comment as well. So I think there's a deep dive of details currently here in front of us that maybe we don't need this level of detail, but I would like to see some kind of reference to preserving the environment, promoting the quality of life, preserving the characteristics of communities, some kind of overarching statement that speaks that this will be addressed in the future or more details will be worked through in the future.
Okay.
Yeah, we definitely have a large number of those goals and policies in the comprehensive plan itself, moving towards tree canopy retention, not just in urban areas, but in rural areas, through both not just regulation like you see here, but also through incentive programs. However, when it comes to regulation, tree canopy is one of the ways that a lot of jurisdictions are starting to go, and also some kind of tree canopy will need to be addressed in the next 5 years, I believe, based upon the new stormwater guidance from the state.
And I don't disagree with anything the commissioners have said, but I think Commissioner Smith is correct. We had a lot of public testimony in support of this initiative. And I, on reflection, I've looked at the matrix. I think staff has worked to integrate some changes that make it easier to work within the structure of this new ordinance. So I think I'm coming down. Let's go ahead and take the step, given the volume of public comment we had in support of it.
I'm with Commissioner Smith on that point as well, and as Mr. Baker said, envisioning statements and a lot of the overarching commentary there is, look at Asheville, North Carolina today, right? There's no denying that we need to protect the environment at the same time that we're trying to solve a housing crisis. We've been saying this for months as we grapple with it. I think I like Commissioner Shattuck's idea that if we could look at the chart and the matrix again with the edits in red, with some of the recommendations we heard in public testimony about how many credits should a 24-inch tree be worth if we can save it, because we all know on the developer side, saving it is really hard work when it comes to making something pencil. So I liked the idea that if you can pull that off, and you should try to pull that off, that you get a bigger bang for your buck on the credit for doing it. So is it possible, Mr. Baker, to see some of what we're seeing in the summary of issue language and we heard in public testimony maybe reflected in an updated chart for consideration at the next meeting?
Yes, definitely. And okay. For things like this chart, I can easily just kind of go through what some of them would be just verbally here, just so people know kind of what it's looking like. In this instance, we'd be looking at the second to last row Basically, what you would see here is the 24-inch or larger would become 24 to 35 inches. And instead of being worth 3.5 tree credits, it would be worth 4.5 tree credits. There would be a new row beneath that that would be established 36 inches or larger. Any tree 36 inches or larger would be 5.5 tree units. And then additionally, what you would be looking at is for groves of trees, which currently is set at 5, and groves of trees are 3 or more trees greater than 8 inches in DBH, diameter at breast height, or would be worth 5 in this. What is proposed here is that would be increased to 6.5. Additionally, if you go down to the final row, since we're looking at the same table here, the replacement of a 2-inch caliper deciduous or broadleaf tree would be worth the same as a evergreen tree. So instead of 0.5, that would move to 1. So it would provide greater tree units both for replacement trees. The purpose of moving deciduous replantings up is that if we are talking about heat blooms and addressing heat, oftentimes deciduous trees provide a much larger canopy for better or worse, harder to maintain. They grow a lot faster in a lot of ways, but they definitely create more shade. And then, of course, like was mentioned by Commissioner Murphy, it maintaining a large tree that is 2 feet or larger in diameter requires preserving a lot of land around the outside of it to preserve its root system. So it should be worth more. Hopefully, addressing those two types of things will help mitigate any potential impacts to developable land that could come from additional tree canopy. And that would
Commissioner Bean. I just go back to the buildable lands report. We're putting another restriction on after we've already said the lands are buildable. If I've got a multifamily going in, it's a forested area, maintaining trees may negate that whole project. I would think that we want to look at it and say, how does this affect what we've already done here? Because we're getting to the point where we're looking at more and more challenging pieces of property to develop. The easy stuff's already gone.
That again is a good concern. We are looking at a limited amount of land, and the land that we're going to have left is going to be more challenging to develop due to the fact that it is land that has not been developed over the last 40 or 50 years for a variety of reasons, and while other land has been developed. So, I think that is a valid point. So it sounds like what we have here is a potential somewhat of a split on the Planning Commission. What staff can do is they can come back with, again, the greater concept, will we, won't we, on tree canopy code in one column, but then can also come back with some of these other tree canopy-related amendments, show them in an actual tabular format so you can see ultimately what it will look like for the meeting on the 15th. Obviously, we would first talk about the will we, won't we on the tree canopy code as a whole, and if we will, then we would go down and have a conversation about the other aspects. But I think it would be helpful, are there any particular Planning Commission feelings on the potential increases that are proposed at this table before we discuss the public right-of-way component?
I think your numbers are good. It's the whole concept we need to look at.
Mm-hmm. Okay, with no other questions about that table, let me move to 495050. This hopefully should not create the same level of nausea. What we're looking at here is in B. What you're seeing here is trees planted in public rights-of-way or areas to be dedicated as public rights-of-way shall not count toward a private lot's existing or replacement tree unit credits. Obviously, a significant number of replacement trees are going to be street trees in nature. If these are private roads, they are going to be on private tracts, thus they are automatically counted. What the testimony indicated was a concern that for trees that are being planted along public right-of-ways, that they were not going to be allowed to be counted whether they are A, replanted or B, maintained. And what is proposed in the table here is, from staff's perspective, for local access roads or local roadways, ones that are interior to the plat, that stand very little likelihood of ever being upgraded, that would make sense. Those trees should be counted. What the concern would be is if we are counting trees that are located along a major arterial. We have had testimony about Anderson Hill Road. Counting trees located along a roadway that may have to be expanded, thus those trees would have to be cut down, probably should not be included. So the language that you see being proposed here is that we are focusing it on what are called local roads. So those are public, those are local access roads. And I think there aren't minor connectors. They are the distinction beneath that in the road standards. Those would be allowed to be counted even if they are public roadways. But if you are an arterial, a minor or major collector, again, Tracedon Boulevard, Central Valley Road, McWilliams, any trees that you're putting in that area likely would not count, as likely those might need to be expanded for a variety of reasons over time. Any other, any questions or concerns that you'd like staff to do a little additional work on in regards to that one? If not, we're moving to page 2. The first of which is we were missing a word, so we did not have a complete sentence. That's always an awkward edit to hear from the public. But yes, we did have a, we were missing the green text there, which is DBH. It is used in determining the diameter of existing trees. It is back up here, 030E. It is this one here. What you'll note is that we were missing a DBH located between tree trunk. A second. I'm on the wrong one here, I think. Okay, there it is. 4.5 feet of that and existing of the highest and lowest ground points are on very steep slopes. It is not possible the local practical point on the uphill side. Basically, we're taking this sentence and making it a full sentence. That was a lot harder to describe than I was expecting. And lastly, under 050C4B, what you're seeing here is when tree credits are required by this chapter, a minimum of 50% of the required area shall be located in protected tracts. We did hear testimony that 50% in protected tracts is somewhat high. It is higher than what Pierce County requires, which is 25%. This would allow for greater flexibility in where these trees are being located. They don't necessarily all need to be in tracts. However, they all would need to be shown on the final plat so that they are noted that they are protected trees. We would recommend that that 50% number would be reduced to 25%. Obviously, people may be putting more, are allowed to put more than that in protected tracts. They just would not be able to put less than 25%.
Is there a mitigation process if they have to go to 23%? Can it put more trees someplace else?
At this point, we do not have any tree banking. That's one of the things that we had discussed previously that could be necessary. Some projects may not be able to meet these numbers on their specific property for a number of different reasons. Either A, they have an entirely cleared lot already, so they have no existing trees, and there's just not enough place to get four homes and the necessary number of trees. We don't have any of that in the code as of yet. Other jurisdictions handle it more ad hoc. They don't really have any code related to it. They kind of do some kind of a negotiation, going back to the concern about subjectivity. That's a level of subjectivity beyond my comfort level. As the public, the developer staff needs something to be able to stand on. And creating some kind of a tree bank process where a piece of property may be able to be replanted with trees in areas that are denuded, covered in blackberries. Those could be public parks. Those could be private properties. However, I do not have the expectation that we're going to be able to get that code to a robustness necessary to include in this draft.
Is there a risk in including it if we're admitting it won't have the meat and teeth we need it to have?
Right now, we believe that there may be some properties that fall into this category. Obviously, the other proposed changes that are being proposed by county staff is hoped to mitigate some of those. But there's always going to be some properties that end up being unbuildable, whether it is the tree canopy code that pushed them over the top, the critical areas ordinance changes that had the effect, or the need for road frontage improvements. It's really hard to tell. But I think there is a conversation to be had that if we truly believe that some kind of tree banking is necessary to provide that additional exhaust valve so that we aren't closing off opportunities, I think that is something that would, again, be a valid statement to make, that probably should be that should be included. Does it need to be? Probably not. Should it be? Likely. Yes, I am running right down the middle of the road on all of this.
Perfect non-answer.
Like I've said on all this, everybody is right in these conversations. We need trees. We need housing. We need to have them both at the same time. We have very challenging properties. Those challenging properties bulk regulations aren't always going to work. So you need subjective flexibility.
And I know that at the next meeting we'll still be discussing tree canopy code as a whole.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
I think I'm with Commissioner Beam on this one and actually back to your original point, when you draw a hard data point line, like 25%, right? Are you killing projects, or, you know, as somebody that does lots of permit submitting and watches staff turnover, and I see notes on getting comments back on a submittal for a permit of certain types, and I don't know the name, that means they're new, and I can see they have a checklist, and I either did or didn't meet the checklist, and right, and there's risk in that during the learning curve, right? It's easy to have an outside-the-box, open and malleable conversation with you. That's not always how it plays out when you're going back and forth over the counter with something real.
That is where the rubber hits the road. All right. I think we'll have a good, robust conversation. We'll come back as we'll kind of populate the Planning Commission recommendation with some of these comments. Again, starting with the will we, won't we, and then working our way down the other proposed changes. That, of course, will be done in a motion and Robert's Rules of Order fashion. The next item is related to multifamily housing, particularly multifamily recreational space or open space. These are areas that are required for a wide variety of uses. Currently, there is no percentage included in code of how much a multifamily project should include. The reason the percentage is not currently located in code, nor is it recommended to be included in code, is multifamily projects are extremely challenging. And the last thing we want is to end up with a math problem where somebody has 40 feet of open space or 40 square feet of open space here. They got 50 over here. You add it all up and it meets 10%, but it doesn't meet the purpose. Instead, what we've proposed, you'll see here in the draft, is specific elements that open space, whether it be interior or exterior. That's one important distinction to make with multifamily projects, is that if they have a fitness center, if they have an interior plaza, all of those are also included as open space, not just the area outside the building envelope. So I do want to make that that distinction, because it's very different than the conversation we had a moment ago about where recreational open space should be located for single-family construction. So we have provided some opportunities here to provide certain level of clarity. Again, it goes back to grade and surface suitable for recreation improvements. Recreation improvements aren't necessarily just tennis courts and pickleball courts. They are places for people to sit, places for people to congregate, places for people to be able to walk on trails. It is a large gambit. However, what we have here is that it is supposed to be suitable for recreation, not located in a critical area, not located on a 15% slope. It should be located on the site of the proposed project, so not off somewhere else. Has to be located on site. Has to be located within the project in a manner that affords good visibility. Again, going back to, we don't want any dark alleys where people are supposed to be hanging out. A bench in a back alley isn't quite what we're looking for. Has no dimensions less than 30 feet, except in widths for trails. Again, trying to provide at least some dimensional standard so we don't end up with, well, I got 5 feet here, and I got 8 feet here, and I got 9 feet over there. You add it all up, and you end up with nothing. Be located in one designated area unless it's determined that recreational opportunities will be better served through multiple areas. So again, we are trying to create one kind of focal point for the development, but we do have the availability for people to spread it out if they can make an argument for it. Be accessible and convenient for year-round use. If you're going to have a lawn where people are going to hang out, it's got to be irrigated. It has to be properly drained, et cetera, so it isn't a big mud pit. And then lastly, play equipment and paved sports courts, et cetera, have to be designed and developed to safety standards. This was a specific request of a planning commissioner, this was our first stab at that language, without going to the percentage, which was also requested.
It's a good start. I have a little problem with the at least 500 square feet in size. And that would mandate, if you have a development with 12 units, mm-hmm. It'd be the same amount of square footage as one with 100 units. Perhaps we set this up where there's a gradual increase based on the quantity of units. So the 500 square feet would be for, you know, up to 24 units. But if it has 100 or 200 units, you would have to increase it accordingly.
Other thoughts?
You mentioned open space tracks in this particular language, but then you mentioned a fitness room. Mm-hmm. There's risk of conflict there. So we probably need to separate definition. I think that in your point, the lowercase a period, it says be of a grade and surface suitable for recreation improvements. Typically, the development itself requires the improvements, so I think that word is misleading. Should just say for recreation and generally have a maximum grade of 5%. Again, you're going to want to differentiate exterior to interior here, because I'm guessing we don't want carpeted floors on treadmills at 5%. So I agree with the good visibility part. Is there a place that you drew your 30-foot dimension? Again, exterior, not interior.
This is largely located. That largely would be located on a exterior type amenity.
Yeah, understood.
So
right.
Yeah, I think probably some distinction here that would relate to internal versus external.
Yeah, I think you're going to want to separate the two before you start defining the parameters around one or the other. I understand the commissioner's point as well that if there was to be the requirement, you should have a difference between a fourplex and a 150-unit apartment building. At the same time, I think there's probably plenty of examples. Could the research be done to find out how that math is working out? We did a 150-unit apartment building for PLU. There's two pickleball courts and, barbecue areas and all that stuff out in the exterior parking area. But we're also allowed to count the fitness room, and some people are allowed to count balconies that are off public spaces. So I know there's more places that shows up, typically in building design itself. But to the site, to the point of the site and having usable space, accessible and convenient to year-round use, I think that's a little challenging in the Pacific Northwest. To call something convenient and not risk, that does that mean covered? I'm not sure. And then the last sentence under, I don't know why it goes from G to 4. I'm hoping that's an H. The languaging probably should say not the latest industry standards, but say industry standards at the time of, or current industry standards at the time of permitting and construction.
Other thoughts on this language? All right. Well, we will take some cuts at that to get us hopefully closer to what we're looking for.
And my only other question, Mr. Baker, would be, are there areas this overlaps other code? Like you mentioned previously, where does landscape, right? Landscape's typically 10% and certain dimensional boundaries at the exterior. Well, that doesn't get you a pickleball court size 30-foot wide something or other lawn to do bocce ball. But I just want to make sure that if we're creating new requirements, that it's not overlapping something that's already covered somewhere else in the process, and designers are already aware at the civil engineering and architect and at that level.
I don't see a lot of, recreational open space is kind of a thing into itself. It doesn't overlap with stormwater tracks. It doesn't overlap with landscaping. It doesn't overlap with a number of those types of elements. It should be predominantly viewed as an additional requirement, not one that is going to be able to do double duty with something already in place.
Right, and that being the case, I think the intent is valiant, and I think it, as we are looking to add a lot of doors to avoid things like homelessness, I think that having properties where you want to not only go inside but potentially recreate on a daily basis is a valid pursuit.
Okay. Moving on to page number 3. Page number 3, this was a comment made by Kitsap Transit concerned about impact fees, largely transportation impact fees, as it relates to transit infrastructure, park and ride lots, bus stations, transfer stations, things like that. They would argue that the impact fee is too high for those. We included this in here because, again, it was a comment from Kitsap Transit. However, we are not adjusting impact fees with the comprehensive plan. The way impact fees are adjusted is first there's capital facilities plan that is done. So whether it's schools, parks, et cetera, the capital facilities plan would be memorialized in the comprehensive plan. And then impact fees are oftentimes considered the end of March the following year. So I do expect that to work its way back into the conversation. KSF Transit is connected with the Department of Community Development to have that as we move towards that after the comprehensive plan is complete. Which leads us to two, renewed interest in urban growth area expansions. I do have some slides on this.
If I could interrupt you real quick, this might be a great time for a quick break for tech to catch up. Just a few
okay.
Minutes.
Sounds great.
We will take a 5-minute break and come back after that.